New ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Lee Tran, an associate partner and chief media officer at Proof Advertising in Austin, Texas. She was nominated as one of Advertising Age's 24 Women to Watch and one of Campaign US's Digital 40 Over 40. As a 20-year advertising veteran with 100% of her time focused exclusively on all things digital, she leads Proof's entire digital team and strategy for clients such as Skinny Pop, Subway Restaurants, Stubbs Barbecue, and many more. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I read that when you joined Proof Advertising in 2008, you brought them from next to zero in digital billings to tens of millions in their first year. So first of all, kudos to you. And secondly, how on earth did you do that? Like, give a little of the secret sauce.
Oh, well, it's a lot of different secret sauces combined, I'd say. But one, Proof is owned by two gentlemen, Texas boys, Brian and Craig. And Brian and I had worked together in the past. So one, we just have a lot of camaraderie and trust together. So that definitely helps. Combined, all three of us have shared vision. So nothing new, but really for me, with that trust, camaraderie, and shared vision of just trying to make something in this crazy ad business, I think my secret sauce is really just being able to have that support and, quote, disrupt from the fringes in this world that's driven by a lot of structure. It has really been, I think, what has propelled us.
Right. So you started in 2008, so we're looking at 10 years. What would you say are the biggest digital trends that you've seen emerge during that time frame?
Obviously, video is big. Video is something that, from an ad girl, allows you to really experience all the sights, sounds, connect to a lot of people in multiple ways. With video, though, the distribution of it is so vast. We can pick and choose where we want to run it, whether it is highly targeted or, again, it's a mass reach vehicle at a moment in time. So I think that's the biggest change, is just with all these choices and video being a key way of expression, how do we know when it's right, when that right connection point is happening? So I think that's been a big one. And obviously, social has blurred the lines between connecting that storytelling and having anybody really create content to and interject, whether it's video or images or text. So not being in complete control of a brand at any time has been exponentially propelled. And we're managing that, whether it's the first example I gave, being expert in how do we distribute the message we feel is right. But at the time, managing this whole other area, everybody gets to say whatever they want at any point in time. And how do we evolve in I think that's the biggest, the balancing act, and really who is saying what and when.
Right. I was actually curious about that in terms of thinking of social, because people now really want to have a conversation with their brands. And I'm wondering, how do you partner with brands, or does it vary? Do you embed people in the brand so that they can be reactive and respond and create that conversation? Do you provide guidelines to clients? Does it vary by client? How do you deal with that?
We have, I guess, part of our secret sauce, really something that I coined here internally, that is a way to manage clients specifically born from the social space, but we've adopted it through everything. It's interesting. That we did this, but I call it PWP. It's platform with a purpose. And I really needed some way to speak to, whether it's clients or other partners that we work with at other agencies or even internal. Everybody wants to do the next brightest, shiniest thing. So, Vine came up. Do we need to be there? Should we not be there? What do we do there? Or we have clients who believe that we create, a set of content, and we basically use the same content across all the social platforms that we're live on. So
it's just an aspect ratio change, right?
Yes. Every platform has a purpose, and we need to make sure that we need to be there. We don't have to be on Pinterest if we don't need to be. And it's one less thing we create, or it makes sense to be there, and we need to create something that really is unique to that space that makes the most sense. So social media, platform with a purpose, that's the base. It really changes based on the client. We have different scenarios where that I prefer. Part of an ad agency role is to, you know, really help shape a brand. Tell it not just from the client's perspective, not from the consumer perspective, but from a perspective that ideally is what we call nothing watered down. That's our mantra. Kind of the truth of the matter that you should know, that salient stuff. Obviously, it's going to be jaded if it's from the consumer standpoint and, you know, you have an opinion formed because you interacted or bought a product, or it's coming from a brand. And our job is to really tell the salient truth of something. And I think it's better served when we are able to do that on a brand's behalf for them. We do that for certain clients at Proof. We also, it's in-house brand teams. And again, I think the struggle that we have, you know, not good or bad, it's just really more of, it becomes very non-objective, very subjective when you live and breathe a brand every day. And from an ad perspective, we're not living and breathing it every day. We know it. So we have different ways we work. And I think it's best when we are closer to it and we're sitting in a biased but unbiased position.
Right. Well, I suppose it's sort of you're not so close that you're forest for the trees kind of thing, that you can telescope back and forth and understand because you are working on multiple brands, you understand the landscape in a way that perhaps in-house teams don't or aren't as aware of. I'm curious, you know, because within social media, Facebook is the gorilla in the marketplace, but it keeps giving itself black eyes. As somebody who speaks to brands that are placing things in various places, and also just recently they flagged some brands as advertising that should have been flagged as political. And so that sort of creates another challenge for brands when, you know, we can't stand on the sidelines anymore. We have to have opinions. What's a brand to do? What are your feelings about sort of how does a brand navigate some of these fraught waters?
Well, I think what's been interesting for me, I started my career, studied advertising, but just started it. Luckily, we're in digital before digital advertising was a thing. So I feel like been through this before, if you will, this battle. But definitely it's scaled up. Facebook is such a big presence. It's the gorilla in the room. When we help brands navigate, it really depends on the brand. And I think one thing we like to say, again, our mantra at Proof is, and we try to find clients who fit it. Like I mentioned earlier, nothing watered down. And so we believe that if you're going to play in the social space, whether it's Facebook or something else, that you are as honest as you can be there and you try not to use the tools that they have, whether you hide or block things or people. So believe in full transparency, and that's what we try to guide our clients. If we're going to be there, we got to be there good and bad. That said, we definitely rely on, and Facebook, you can argue, is a software company or a media company. What company are they? We are all part of, if you participated in their product. And from our guidance, it's, you know, the bad thing is, you know, one of our clients is Travel Texas, so promoting tourism in the state of Texas. And we're just promoting travel. But being in that space on Facebook specifically, there is a lot of commentary on political matters. And that's an interesting debate that we'll have to take, you know, whether you do an organic post or you do a paid post, anybody can comment and be off topic. And we have to decide, you know, how much is too much on both sides.
Right.
At the same time, you know, Facebook, I will give them one prop. They were the first one. We also have an alcohol brand. And it's really important to figure out how to age gate.
Oh, right. Of course.
And of all of the social platforms out there, they were the ones who really had the means, maybe the motivation, but they were the first ones to really figure that out. So you know, we take the good with the bad in every facet with social media.
Right. So how, you know, in terms of proof, are you also media placing and planning, or is that, you know, the whole all around the issues and outside of the social arena, brand safety, people talk a lot about brand safety and where advertisements appear. Is that part of what your firm does, or are you really purely developing that creative, that brand voice? How broad is your service?
Proof is pretty broad. We're an independent agency, but we can do what you need as far as advertising is concerned, whether it's content creation, finding the audience, finding research and insight. So we kind of do it all, but my role specifically has evolved. Technically right now, the way we run it is I'm really trying to be thoughtful and considerate to consumer touch points. And that can be any touch point. It could be an app, it could be social media, it could be a website, it could be, you know, ads on your TV screen in your living room. So it could be anything. So for us, it's finding that right consumer touch point. For mm-hmm. a brand or a business problem that a brand's having. But that's my specific role, but we're also, you know, again, the lines are blurred too. So we really work a lot in the social space, create a lot of content for clients, manage it from a customer service perspective. So that's the interesting part of, I think, about advertising and the evolution is sometimes I feel like we're really extensions of the brand. We just are not there anymore.
Right. I'm curious what your feelings are around branded content. There's a lot of discussion around that, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of it, and you probably have opinions on what's good and what's bad use of branded content. So what would you say is a, you know, I guess, how do you feel it should be played with? I mean, if we're thinking about not just platform with a purpose, but, you know, deliverable with a purpose, if you will, what do you think the best type of branded content is?
I thought I was going to go into print journalism before I switched my major to advertising. And so I definitely think branded content is something that is not an advertorial. I mean, back in the day with print ads, you could buy ad space and then have true advertorial where a consumer knows that for the most part, that's coming from a company. That's not the editorial publication that they're reading. I think with branded mm-hmm. today, particularly in quote any digital space, whether it's video or social, I think a lot of consumers, and I think that's part of our roles as being thoughtful advertisers, is sometimes it comes across as actual editorial. It's a little too native, a little too branded to the publication that it's living in. So for mm-hmm. me, I think we need to be respectful and try to really use branded content to bring to life something that is new or unique, and basically use it to provide insight to consumers. So when that, or inspiration, and when that mm-hmm. happens and it's basically creating content that we think is useful, then I think it serves a role. I also have seen it really abused, obviously, whether you're talking about political advertising or not. But when it serves a, mm-hmm. you know, a greater purpose and it's sharing something that is truthful, that you know somebody, you know more people need to know about it, then it serves a great role. But when used incorrectly, it doesn't. And because it's so blurred today on what that looks like for consumers, you know, you can ask a college student or you can ask a retired person on certain platforms, like, is this advertising or not? And, you know, you'll get a mixed bag of answers regardless of age. We've just done a really good job on blurring the lines on what is truly editorial and what's truly not. But at the same time, refreshing. Right. I mean, I have always respected what Red Bull has done. I believe they, you know, blur the lines of what is just a pure company with product to sell and, you know, how they actually align with people's lifestyles and, you know, create great content that everybody wants to consume or watch, even if you're not drinking the product. So
right. They're pretty unique in having accomplished that, right? I mean, I can't think of anybody else who's quite as pervasive, you know, in their approach to it as that. I'm trying to think as I'm talking to you. And I
mean, they've always been my sort of, you know, dream of, even with any of our clients, you know, if we can get there, I think that is, they are somewhat of a unicorn. Sometimes I think GoPro is a good example. They have a product, but they, by nature, are enabling content creation and helping to curate it.
Well, what's interesting with GoPro, though, is that they started a content unit and then folded it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. They made a foray into that and then decided no, and that it's all user generated. It's sort of powered by rather than created by them.
I think that that's what's interesting too about content creation controlled by the masses is if you just give the tools and let them do it and they can do it better, then why not? And a lot of that has happened before where you try to create something and you realize that it's not cost effective. I feel like, you know, GE with their back in the day eco imagination campaign, they really try to create a lot of thought leadership on innovation in their space and really put a lot of great content out there. It has evolved since then too.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious again, and I have to say I love your platform with a purpose. I think I'm going to fold that into my thinking going forward. It's so sort of spot on, you know, looking at Gen Z and younger generations and the rise of messaging as a thing that they're not even necessarily using the platforms for anything but messaging, these social platforms. At what point can brands interact in a successful manner with audiences who are messaging? Is that something you can do without overdoing it? And how do you determine when you've gone to, like, that's a very difficult thing to navigate, I would think. How do you think about sort of the invasion into what could be seen as sort of private space, the consumer conversation?
I definitely believe that the rules of engagement haven't changed. We just have more hyper now, and we have to be more thoughtful, like I said, platform with a purpose earlier, and how we respect that. You know, TV screens, the old tubes and radio devices in people's living rooms. I mean, we have been the uninvited guests as advertisers for so long. And yes, with devices now, there's just a lot more of ways that we are reaching consumers, literally. We're in their pockets with smart devices in their purses, wearables today, we're attached to people. My son is 19. He's part of Gen Z. I think of having been part of the invention of the thought of what is digital advertising and how much has changed over time. And then I wonder for my son what that really means in terms of privacy. So I haven't, it's on my bucket list, but I definitely believe in privacy, obviously with what we mentioned before with Facebook, mm-hmm. and it's not overt, GDPR happening, the regulations in California happening in Canada, that we have, the internet has been a wild, wild west, and it still is, and privacy has been something that has been overlooked, stepped on, smart TVs in people's home. I think education is power. Myself with my son, I have to keep reminding him that when he accepts terms and he doesn't really understand it, you know, what are the rules of engagement? What is he putting out there? Does he understand it? Mm-hmm. His first Gmail account. You know, I tried to, as a mom and a person in this business, explain that, you know, what you write on there
is being read.
And I would explain to him, if you think about the postal code today, if there is an envelope that's mailed to me with my name and somebody else opens that, that's not legal. But here we are with Gmail and, you know, taking care of banking and writing notes and doing anything. And all that is stored and collected and used. But having that be more, having that education out there is really important. It's just, there needs to be more of it. But I get, you know, I a lot of our friends across Atlantic and GDPR, it made a lot of people think.
Well, I mean, I guess what I was wondering was, because I've noticed that, for instance, my children, let's say they use Snap, but they use it primarily for messaging and they don't look at brand stories and they don't interact that way. And I know that certain sort of causes sometimes are able to text message people who sign up, you know, that, and they found that the response rate to text is much higher than the response rate to email. And yet I think, okay, that works for one organization is texting, but if everybody starts texting, then it just becomes too much. So how, if messaging is sort of the next frontier, and we say, well, you know, Facebook acquired WhatsApp, and so clearly they're thinking that this is where they're moving into that, and Messenger as well. How do we think about new platforms? And because you are a person who's existed on the cutting edge, you're always, you know, what are those things that you see coming down the pike, which maybe other people don't even have on their radar yet?
I definitely think that with going back to the messaging aspect, when I think about how my son connects with the brands he loves, it's that the brand itself, regardless of the platform, because each platform is a brand, they have uniquely been able to connect with him. If he were to choose any sort of social platform, he would only have Snapchat and get rid of everything else. And the reason he picks Snapchat is, again, I think it's a little bit more of a culture shift, is he sees the old social media as almost a very nostalgic way or sentimental way for the quote older generations to look back on things, keep a scrapbook, a yearbook. And what he likes about the premise of Snapchat at its original core is that Gen Z doesn't need to have all that stored. And it, you know, when you say it's a messaging app, for him, it's a one-stop social platform to actually, if he wants to look at the Discover publishing platforms, news or sports or whatever, that's where he goes. If he wants to message, that's where he goes. If he wants to share his day, that's where he goes. But nothing is permanent, per se. Even messages that he'll send with it only live 30 days. So nothing's really archived for too long. And so that impermanence for him is what he gravitates towards. So if I were to say, what is the future? I think it is this kind of cleansing of, you know, I don't want everything stored in one place. I don't want to have it all living there, because we are seeing and we know that the pitfalls. So that's what he likes about it. I think, again, it's that opposite connection. So the next best thing for messaging, I think, will be the impermanence. And the way brands connect to consumers is, it's going to be a challenge, because I think what they're looking for is, you know, that impermanence, that, you know, something that I don't refer back to all the time, but to keep it fresh and unique and keeping me interested. And that's really the change that's going to happen from a publisher and brand standpoint, is no one wants to see things forever, but no one wants to see the same things forever.
What about influencers? How do you feel about influencers?
They have to have a role, obviously. I think that for us, we've used them in different ways. For us, it's again, depending on the brand, if we have a brand that's trying to enter into a new space and they yet haven't built credibility there, it's great to borrow equity regardless of where it is. So influencers, I think, are nothing new in that regard. But what we like about influencers is, particularly in social media, going back to platform with a purpose, is if they've existed, whether they're a micro or a macro influencer, and they've created their own sort of following and something that we align with, and they've done the heavy lifting themselves already, and you know, why not borrow their equity to help us either kickstart something or continue building what we've created somewhere else? But when we do platform with a purpose, sometimes Brand Z will say, I really, really want to be on Pinterest. And we'll say, but we're not only focused on females, and here are the stats, and, you know, they have, you know, this is what we would need from it, and boards and explaining all that. But why not just partner with a few, you know, influencers that live and breathe that space and borrow their equity? It all goes back to platform with a purpose for us. We use influencers, but we try to be really thoughtful on how and why we use them. If we look at the emerging trends, and it's really about AI and Internet of Things, I think that that's what we need to look at. I mean, it blows my mind. It's hard to see what's going to happen around the corner. I think it's easier to imagine what could happen in the next decade or two or three, because, you know, it is being R&D'd now. We're entertained by it, whether it's watching Westworld or whatever it is. But I feel like those two combinations will help drive the next thing. I would love to predict what that next thing is and be a part of making that happen, because I was there for the .com boom and bust. But yeah, I mean,
No, I was just going to, jump in, and then I didn't want to walk all over your, what you were saying, because I'm curious about your opinions on AR and VR, which people were making a lot of noise about, but then haven't necessarily materialized the promise yet. And is that just part of the normal cycle of enthusiasm and then reality and then something actually emerges? How do you use AR? Do you use VR? Which of the two excites you more?
Yeah, I think we have used AR, VR for a few clients. Again, when it makes sense, we have had a lot of experience with travel clients, and I definitely feel like, you know, part of travel inherently is people feeling inspired. And even though they've seen, you know, a picture, whether it's in National Geographic or on their friends and family social media, you know, the more you can whet someone's appetite and make them feel like they could be there tomorrow, that's the inspiring, encouraging part about travel advertising. And so AR and VR helps with that. And we've done both for that. I think it serves a role. It doesn't always, though. We've had other brands like CPG where I feel like it's very forced. We're trying to find the right way to, you know, play with bright new shiny objects. And usually if we're doing that and I feel like we're finding it's because we didn't win the platform with a purpose, you know, strategy, we went off the rails there.
Right.
But, you know, AR, VR, I feel like also there are certain brands, there are a lot of AR, VR experiences and games out there that exist that a lot of great brands found a great fit with, you know, whether it's just playing video games and being able to, you know, have product placement in there, to just, you know, supporting that area or role in that AR VR experience. Recently, I got to play with a friend of mine has this studio where that's all they do, AR VR, and we're actually trying to enable grocery store shopping by putting on your VR device.
You mean like your headset, and so then you walk around a virtual store? Is that?
Yeah, but basically you're in your home, but you don't want the grocery store experience. You want to be able to actually see things and experience it. You don't want to go buy your stuff online. So you're walking in an aisle and you're actually looking at the produce and you're picking it up. And it's a fun experience where you can actually then take that thing that you're picking up, put it in your cart, and it goes into, you know, your quote, whatever, digital shopping cart in your VR world. But you're doing the whole thing of going to a grocery store. You're just at home and you can buy everything, or you can basically put it where you then actually go to the store and pick it up. But it's a fascinating experience. And I asked, well, why would anybody just not online grocery shop if it's available, or use an app that send somebody there, or just go to the grocery store? And they said it's because one day, it's like all the sci-fi movies that you watch, people will want to do everything they can do within their home and not leave.
Oh, so sad.
I know, it's very sad. And basically, that, you know, they're just trying to look at human behavior and predict it and create a model that works for the future. And
it is very Westworld, isn't it? I mean,
but yes, if you want that old school grocery store buy experience and you don't want to click on a screen, you can actually put on your gear and do your online shopping, grocery store shopping.
That's fascinating. I mean, you know, I of course immediately am thinking, well, this could be great for people who are like phobias, you know, if they have a grocery store phobia, and this will get them over their grocery store phobia. But Yeah.
And I think that's what's so fascinating too about what is the future for Gen Z, or how brands today and advertising partners can help. But it is trying to be a futurologist. It is trying to, you know, understand where we are today as a society, and then use technology to help, you know, in those insights and technology to help shape the future. And whoever gets there fast, obviously, is the winner, fast and of course, successfully. But it's, I find, you know, again, almost going back to that secret sauce, balancing that need for incremental innovation with radical innovation, trying to find that balance is really hard. Competing in the present and the future is hard.
Right. What would you say, because I can't believe it, we're already like running through our time, but what would you say would be best practices if you were, you know, what are the sort of three best practices that anybody who's looking at the digital universe, which is really, I mean, basically everything, it's a screen and not in real life. What are best practices that people should always have top of mind? Obviously, we have platform with a purpose. What else would you add to that list?
Yeah, platform with a purpose for sure. What are the three things that you would need? Understanding the and mapping the kind of demand landscape. I think that's also very important. It's, to me, a riff on platform with a purpose, but it really is, if we're going to be creators of something, whatever it is that we're creating that's new, you know, what is truly that demand landscape, and is it worth it? So I find oftentimes with projects and clients, I'm looking back, is, you know, why did we spend all that time doing that? That we should have been more realistic about it. So really demand landscape mapping, just what is the true demand for this and is it really worth it? Once you just determine your platform with a purpose. And the final one, I think, is again, just, yeah, these are basics, but really being transparent and truthful with what you're doing. I oftentimes feel like, you know, some our business today has been living in, whether it's like fraught with all that fake news that you're talking about, or fake users, or fake clicks, or clickbait, and we've all played a role somehow in there. So just, you know, after you've created your platform with a purpose, determine really, you know, what the demand landscape is and mapped it out, and then, you know, basically the last one is be transparent and true once you execute it. And I think that's what we tend to forget when we're doing it.
Right, right. So last question. So you've done all those things and you've got to start now with the creative. Where do you go to get inspired? What do you turn to inspire your creative?
The easy spot is if we're in downtown Austin. So that's very, very helpful. We're right off of Congress near the Capitol, but we actually have our own private sort of speakeasy bar. It's not open to the public. It's on the infamous 6th Street, Dirty Street in Austin. It's just a very unique Austin vibe. It's like I said, private, but it's a place just to pour a glass of bourbon or whatever your preference is and kick your feet up and just think in quiet. And what I like is the energy of Austin is fantastic for creation, but just finding a quiet spot anywhere is, I think, for me, what's helpful. We're lucky enough to have that. But when then I truly need to be inspired, sometimes it's just going back to the same spot that over time has been inspiring for me. One of them is the Rothko Chapel in Houston, And it was inspired by people who enjoy the arts, created by artists. It itself has changed over time and found its platform with a purpose and meaning, and it's evolved, but it's still the same sort of space. So I find it's nice just to have a sort of touchstone throughout your entire life, just to go there and reflect on what it is that you need to adjust or change. Those are my inspiration points.
Great. So what is your, you know, I guess the last thing is, how can people find out more about you and Proof, and what's up next for you?
We are on social media, not them all, but if you look, we're at Proof ADV, PROOFADV. I'm also on the socials at LYTTRAN, proof-advertising.com. For me, what's next? That's fascinating. Yeah, I mentioned the two owners. Brian recently asked me if I wanted to write a book. I wanted to be a journalism major, I mentioned earlier. That kind of, you know, he kind of teased that out, and that's intriguing. I've never thought about that. It's funny. I introduced PWP, Platform with a Purpose, here at Proof, and I think that they both have caught on to it finally. Not finally, they've always been supportive, but yeah, he really thinks I should write a book about that. I don't know what the angle would be, but it would be about that.
I think that's a very smart thing, which would be well received, because I think a lot of people need to be strategic. And by having that helps give a sort of a North Star to how you navigate the waters of this big wide world, because not everybody should be everywhere. It will dilute their message far too much. And I think it'd be great. So when you write that book, let me know and we can interview you about your book.
Thank you.
Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for joining and talking about digital and social and what you think is happening. I really appreciate your insights and thank you.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media, and a big thank you to our guest,
Lee Tran.
And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.